ride coming from Portland.
Course development, and I was like, Carl should have recorded this.
I'd like to call to order the House Committee on Business and Labor for the 15th of February. We have a fairly short agenda today, but we're going to go, first of all, hear from a very interesting program that I'm very interested to hear about, and then we'll have one informational hearing, and that'll be it. So with that, I do have a quick announcement, and so you want to put on your calendars. The next two meetings, next Monday and Wednesday, are going to be in Hearing Room C, because that committee is having a joint meeting, so they need the big room. So we will be in Hearing Room C, not Hearing Room F. Okay, so with that, I open an informational meeting on optolexia.
I don't know.
That's screening technology. That's Monday, right? And I hope I pronounce that right.
Next Wednesday.
If you want to come on up, Robin Battison and Catherine Hartlob. And did you say anything about it?
I think so.
Okay. Welcome to our committee.
I think she's actually going to do that.
Thank you, Representative Doherty. Is the microphone on? Hold it closer here.
Perfect.
That's good. And thank you for inviting us to make this presentation. Many of you on the board are on the committee are former teachers.
Yes. And we need to have your name for the record.
Yes, the name for the record is Robin Battison, and I'm representing a company called Optolexia in Sweden. Many of you are teachers or communication specialists, bloggers, journalists, etc., and that's very nice to have that kind of competence sitting in front here. And as you probably know, the first rule of making a public presentation is not to get a head cold on the day of. So I'm going to try to use this voice sparingly, few words, and fewer PowerPoint pictures. The background here is that I'm not an expert on dyslexia. I am a linguist. But in the 1970s, I worked with a special population, deaf people, and signing communication. In the 80s, I moved to Washington and worked with bureaucratic language, legislators, and lawyers trying to improve communication with the public. In the 90s, I moved on to computers and computer interfaces with IBM. And by the year 2000, I was working in international business communication. And that has landed me back in Portland, here today, with Optolexia, dealing with dyslexics and other special population with a language issue. Now, I have up here behind me, just checking, what a promise, screening for dyslexia in 2 minutes. Now, I wish that I could cover this topic in 2 minutes. We're going to take about 20. But that is the promise, that screening in a very new method based upon a longitudinal study can be documented to take place in 2 minutes and give an accurate prediction of those at risk for dyslexia.
Madam Chair, please don't let him test any of us during this hearing, if you would.
No, no surreptitious cameras, no reading tasks. So there we go. I mean, you have worked with dyslexia, and you have worked on legislation and are following the issues here in Oregon. It's not a problem confined to Oregon, as we know. And it's a very contentious issue. Lots of experts have statements about dyslexia. They have theories about what and why and how to address it. And there are lots of people selling programs and products about it, too. So let's just spend a couple of moments reviewing what we do know about dyslexia, or can agree on. One is that it's a specific learning disability that is neurobiological in origin. And I say that with some confidence because that's the official statement of the International Dyslexia Association, conveniently located in Baltimore, USA. And it's also language that is copied and used in many state documents and principles as well. So that's a good one. There are other alternative theories, but let's not talk about those. The other is that early identification leading to an assessment and proper interventions and instruction can help avoid the negative outcomes that we all identify with dyslexia. And the negative outcomes are very well known to us. It's discouragement from reading, taking in knowledge, working in classrooms, developing healthy peer relationships, relationships to knowledge, et cetera, until, in the best of all worlds, the cycle is broken and one gets some kind of special assistance or instruction. Early screening for those at risk for dyslexia is a good starting point. Early screening, simply trying to flag those who are most at risk of dyslexia. The earlier the better. By early, I mean as children begin to read, not at the age of 9 or 12 or 13. God forbid. The other thing we could probably agree upon is that there are lots of competing interests in what I call the dyslexia ecosystem. All the people who have an opinion about it, and the dyslexics themselves, their parents, who very often are advocates, the teachers, who may start off knowing a little about dyslexia and may end up knowing a lot about dyslexia, the school resource people, all the district administrators and legislators, and all the speech pathologists and other professionals back of them, and all the publishing companies willing to publish tests and books and instructional guidance, etc. So it's a huge industry. I haven't counted it, but it's huge. And they don't all agree. I spent some time in September looking at, I mean, I've said that early screening and early identification of dyslexics is something that's pretty well acknowledged as a good thing, because we know that if you catch kids in the first year of reading or so, then you can really turn them around very often with the proper guidance and support. I spent some time in England in September looking at them and what they do with dyslexia, talking with the experts and the associations, and they seem to have a different shift or preponderance of opinion there. Early screening is not required. It's all up to the individual schools to do it, and where they're putting the resources seems to be in the secondary students and post-secondary students, trying to get them to build support and accommodation in the universities for dyslexic students. In other words, way too late, according to received opinion here in the United States. My associate, Catherine Hartlove, who is sitting behind me, and I have also had the opportunity to spend a few weeks looking widely at what is happening with dyslexia legislation and implementation of legislation with regard to screening in the United States. And I'd say we have 51 trouble spots, you know, the 50 states plus the District of Columbia. We didn't talk to every state, but the picture that emerges is one of, yes, there is legislation in place in about 14 or 15 states. Implementation is underway, but in most cases, the states have delegated the choice of screening tools to a local level, so they may prescribe a list of approved screening tools, or they may say any screening tool you use should meet these five or six criteria. That's characterizes Oregon as well. Or they may simply leave it rather open. So that means that everyone in the state the size of Texas or Ohio, the districts or schools could choose as they might. And of course, that leaves the issue of comparability of data and compatibility of data. It throws it right out the window.
Yeah, we'll get you some water.
There we go. The voice is failing.
We've got some water up here.
Thank you. I have a throat lozenge on the way, too. I do apologize. Thank you. The problems that states are encountering are how to train people to use these screening methods. They don't come easy. The funding, of course, and also a word which I've learned since moving to Oregon. It's called fidelity, meaning getting the teachers and the districts to conform, to actually comply with the regulations and directives that come down to them. I used to call it, thank you. And the other thing that matters to schools is, of course, taking a screening mechanism and fitting it into the immense network of other tests and evaluations and assessments that is a major part of the school year, even at the young years here in the United States. So there we have a problem statement. And if we're focusing on screening, what would a good screening method be? Now, screening to me means a simple test that can give a result which points you in a certain direction or this direction. It's like triage. I go to the doctor, they prick my finger. A few days later, I get a phone call, everything's okay. I checked a form on a medical form, a questionnaire that said, have you ever been a smoker? I checked, yes, because of my youthful sins. And that meant I had to take a certain test 50 years after I was a teenager. So that's a screening method. It's fast, it's quick, it's dirty, it separates sheep from goats. It should be convenient and practical, and a dyslexia screening test should not take a lot of work away from the school, no manual processing. One very popular test we looked at, we asked some teachers to assess how much time they put in with it every year, and the assessment came back about 30 hours for a classroom of kids to do all the documentation, the prep, putting it in the computer, et cetera, et cetera. It should give a clear result that's easy to understand. It should be accurate. It should identify the right children and not identify any false positives. And right now, that's one of the problems with screening methods, false positives. It should be evidence-based, the scientific evidence that it, in fact, works. And it should be objective. Everyone should be measured the same way, just from day in, day out. The results from a given child or given class should be available for aggregation, gathering into larger amounts, looking at a whole school, looking at a whole school district, looking at a whole state if you want to, aggregating the data and looking at it in a comparable light. And this is something, the last one here, it should be, in my view, it should be independent of the reading curriculum. Now that's an idea that got passed to me in this building a few weeks ago, and I'm glad I encountered that. Lots of screening tools are tied to a curriculum or a particular approach to then addressing the problems. There's nothing wrong with that in principle, but as we shall see, it leads to an interesting problem. Because we look at screening today, and I'm wondering if I have a mouse on this. There we go. Okay, if we look at screening today and go from left to right, you have a population, let's say a classroom of kids, and you put in a screening, dyslexia screening method. And what happens, these are multi-part tests very often, where you might screen every few months, look at a result, get something that's a little bit off, and then put in a little intervention, see what happens. That didn't work. Okay, let's try a little bit more. We don't rush to judgment with these current screening tools. It may take a year or more before someone is willing to say, you know, this problem isn't going to go away. We've been working with this kid, and she's not exactly keeping up with her peers, and I suspect dyslexia. So that's a typical situation where the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is a cluster of tests spread out over time and space, and it's what I would refer to as not a cluster of tests, but a clutter of tests. Lots of tests, and it could be different in different schools, different in different school districts, different timings, etc. The end result here is that it identifies some children as being at risk for dyslexia, and they would then enter, in the best possible case, a professional assessment or evaluation. The nomenclature varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, which could be a few hours or a few days, depending, because you often have a test retest with a big gap in between. And in the best possible case, there's some interventions and some follow-up and some repeated interventions, and we hope we have the child on the right track again. But the big issue here is that this screening leading to a result, it's not a fast result. It leads to more screening, more results, looking at the evidence, not being able to give an authoritative answer. And if it's done by a teacher, of course, the teacher is often, more often than not a dyslexia expert. Of course, they're not. The dyslexia experts are few and far between. Lucky if a school district has one or two good ones, right? So that's screening today. What I maintain, remember I said it was a two-minute promise, that there is a way of testing for risk of dyslexia in children, even very young children, in just 2 minutes. And that's the only change there is to this particular diagram. The promise is that you identify with greater accuracy, often a fewer number of children, and say, these are at high risk for dyslexia. Let's get them to an evaluation by an expert quickly. Let's not fuss about whether we have 5 or 6 kids this time who have to go, and then we schedule them over a period of 3 more months to meet our district specialist. Let's get them in there quickly. So the fewer you have, that's a plus as well. Now this is nothing short of a paradigm shift. This is a different way of doing business. And I'll get to how it's done with a fun video that was made by the company in Sweden, of course, because that's where they're from. And yes, it's in Swedish, because that's where the film is. So I'm going to display.
Would you like me to translate?
Would you like to translate?
No.
Okay.
I was like, wow, Swedish too.
I will translate. Okay, I will attempt to translate. There's two different films. I'm just going to show this one. I think it's about 2 minutes long, and it shows this woman who is coming here to administer the tests, because the teacher does not administer the test, but an agent of Optolexia would do this. So this is, she's explaining how it's done.
Mina kollegor kommer till skolan, och där kommer vi till klassen.
We come to the class. Hey. Greet the class and explain what's going on.
En av er i taget kommer gå in med mig i ett rum, och där ska ni få sitta framför en dataskärm. Och på den nedre kanten på skärmen så sitter en kamera.
Och sen så träffar vi eleverna enskilt. För de får säga bokstäver heter.
Den här tjänsten bygger på en metod där vi mäter ögonrörelser vid läsning. Och genom att göra det så kan vi rent objektivt fånga hur läsprocessen faktiskt ser ut.
Of how they're using their eyes. Okay, now you're going to read something. Do you want to read aloud or silently? Okay. And you can see what it's doing is the camera is tracking her eye movements. We'll come back to why this works in a second. Here was a comprehension question at the end. We spend a couple of minutes with each student, then we do the whole class like that. And then there's some data crunching. We analyze the data and compare them by database. And after about a week, we've completed analysis of the whole school, or number of grades. You can see the different schools or the different students, individual students, or all classrooms.
Så när resultaten kommer till skolan så har vi en återkoppling.
And then we give feedback to the school personnel who may have some questions about the interpretation. I love meeting the kids. They enjoy really doing this task too. Okay, did anyone learn some new Swedish words that way?
I learned that they had about 15 kids in their classroom, which is...
Well, like this was a demonstration. Yeah. That was a demonstration. It's more like reality. 25 to 30. I knew someone would
say
that.
Sorry.
Right. I think it just would have been an unwieldy demonstration to do that this way. Yes, there could be 30. There could be 35. Mm-hmm. Let me... just climb back to the second film right about here.
Dyslexia är ett funktionshinder.
Of course. So I didn't have it full screen before, didn't I? No one told me.
Det innebär att man har väldigt svårt att lära sig att läsa. Drabbar ungefär 5-10%
av... About 5-10% of the population might have dyslexia. I don't know why it's slow here. No, I can't even understand what you're saying. That's okay, that's the school principal. Let's not. It's something disrupting. There's a disturbance in the force. Let's not
det måste vara...
Let's not.
Det måste vara för att kunna säga att det är mycket jobbigt.
That was testimony of those who use it. Well, let's just start right here again. So there we have the 2 minute. You understand how it works. The two minute screening version. So what we have to characterize the method, it is efficient. There is early identification possible, because as long as the child can read somewhat, you get to how they're using their eyes in reading. They don't have to be a skilled or gifted reader. The accuracy is measured at between 94% and 96%, depending on how it works out. And here come reinforcements. Thank you very much. I'm behind. I'll try to catch up. Mm-hmm. And it's objective, because the measurement being taken is that of an eye camera on the screen measuring the eye movements. How does that work in principle? Here is, because the cognitive process of reading is reflected in the eyes. This is not an explanation for dyslexia. It's simply said it's correlated with it. The low risk of dyslexia, working through this Swedish text, as you notice, you have a regular movement, and the circles represent very short dwell times or resting times on the text. The larger ones in the high risk for dyslexia case indicate a longer dwell time, a fixation point on a given word, and the movements can also be irregular. Now, what the program does, using artificial intelligence and data mining, some of you know this as big data as well, is that it crunches these numbers and looks at hundreds of different parameters of ways that these movements co-vary and occur, thus leading to indication of how to separate those who are poor at reading from good at reading. So that's the whole method, basically. Recording of eye movements. It's uploaded to the cloud, crunched by a large computer using artificial intelligence analysis and machine learning. It is applying an analysis that no human being is capable of doing. We let machines look at large amounts of data and pull out the patterns that are of interest. That's machine learning, and it's all over the place right now. Then the results become accessible in a web portal. Now, come back to the, here is another view of the results. On the right-hand side, you see what happened to class 2A, and the individuals are given a green or a red light there. What happens to a given school here and the different classes, and then the different schools within a given school district. And the results are available online, of course, to those authorized to get to it. So the school principals and district personnel like this in Sweden, because then they can say, whoa, here's where we have the problems. Here's where we need to place the specialist next year in this school, because a lot of call for this right here. And over here, some other kind of visitation necessary. So they can see clear decision support for their concerns. A bit about optolexia is that we're going back to where the study that started with a longitudinal study in 1991, that's pretty soon, it's going to be 30 years, isn't it? A large county in the southern part of Sweden called Jönköping had a longitudinal study of, I think it was about 1,800 kids who were followed from the age of 6 to about the age of 26. And they did all kinds of tests with these kids involving learning and reading and other kinds of abilities as well. When they were 9 years old, they all had their eyes tracked while they were reading. And this little gold mine of data sat around and supported this particular research project. And then it was discovered later by the fellows running Optolexia on their new data mining applications, and they discovered that they could then tie the results of the eye movements and use it as a predictor for those who ended up with dyslexia according to all the school records and interventions. So this is a great breakthrough. sort of like the Rosetta Stone, if you will. So by 2015, they said, well, let's start a company and get this out there. The screening method was launched earlier, about a year ago, in Sweden. And the numbers have been crunched, and the scientific method has been presented in one paper, which I can provide you a reference to. First pilot has been provided in the U.S. as well, and we're doing some other pilots this month and next month, and going to the U.K. in April. And this method, because of the way it's not built on verbal behavior, so to speak, but just how eyes move across a text, can be adapted to other languages very easily. So two languages so far, Swedish and English, and others are in the works, which is very interesting for lots of people around the world. I'm going to round up just by saying that this is a, I should say right off, that I don't work for Optalexia. They're not my employer, but we're helping them understand what is of concern in this dyslexia ecosystem in the United States, find out what different states are requiring for their dyslexia screening, helping them to meet those requirements and get them better known. So today we are meeting here in this committee, and tomorrow, by coincidence, we're going to be meeting with the Senate Committee, mm-hmm. Education, and on Friday we'll be meeting with Region 1 folks, and hoping that others will want to be part of a first pilot in Oregon. There are other pilots going on, and I don't know how much resources they have to do testing all around the world, but we'll see about that. I'm going to break off there, but I'm going to say something about Sweden and Swedish technology. I lived in Sweden for 30 years, and I came back, and I'm an Oregonian since 1 year back. And people have often different opinions about what goes on in Sweden and what can be learned from them. But I would like you to think about this, because this is a big deal, thinking about using a Swedish product in the schools. But as you go to your car and sit in your car on the way home today, and you sit there and you put that seatbelt on, well, that three-point safety belt is a Swedish invention. You drive at home, you park in your garage. As you walk through your garage, you look at your toolbox. Do you have an adjustable crescent wrench in that toolbox? Swedish invention. Go to into the kitchen, you open the refrigerator. 1924, Swedish invention. You look inside the refrigerator and you pull out a carton of milk made by Tetra Pak. Swedish invention. So it's everywhere. Maybe some of you use Skype to communicate with distant relatives in France. Sorry, Swedish again. And Spotify, the music program. Well, that's the promotion for things Swedish. I just want to let you know that some good things do come out of the country, and Optalexia is one of them. And we hope that as you further formulate your goals and directives and legislation, that you have an open mind with regard to screen. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Before we open this up to questions, one of the reasons for this is last session the Education Committee in the House passed a bill requiring dyslexic specialist testing, all of these kind of things in the schools to be able to identify dyslexia earlier in the schools. And we're still in the rulemaking process. We're still working with this. But then Senator Roblin have been in touch with the other gentleman, and we thought that this would be a good opportunity to at least continue with what we started with last session. So anyway, so is there another presentation, or can we open it up for questions?
There are no other presentations.
Okay, we will open up to questions. Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty. I have two questions. The first one is, and this is not a big deal, but you said you don't work with the company that you're briefing for. Who do you work for?
I have my own company, and I sell my services as a consultant. So,
okay.
In the past, we've terminated a project right now with Optalexia.
Okay.
So, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the only reason we don't have the gentleman from Sweden is that he's in Seattle today. So,
That's right. I forgot to mention.
Okay.
No, he is doing something in Seattle.
Got it.
So.
Okay.
Anyway,
yeah, Microsoft is giving him an award on the basis of the excellence of the artificial intelligence that they have built into this product with Microsoft's help.
Okay, now you scared me because you're talking Skynet. But the second question relates to, is it true, and this is, I'm not an expert in this at all, is it true that Swedish, in term, the Swedish language manifests, or that the impact of dyslexia manifests itself differently with the Swedish language because of the sounds, the spelling, and everything else than it does with English? Is there
no. There's no reason to suspect any difference.
No difference. Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Representative McLean.
Well, mine was a little bit similar to the last question. The scanning, seeing where the eyes are going as they're reading, that makes a lot of sense to me. But there, in my studies, there's like 178 or 187, different types or forms of dyslexia or how it presents. And so what my wonder was that after they've done the scanning with the machine, there are a lot of different clues there as far as how they're reading or what's going on or what type of dyslexia they're experiencing. So I guess I was looking for a second level of information about what they do with the pictures of the eyes once that's finished. Is it just taking the screening and then they hand it off to somebody else?
Well, they don't actually take pictures of the eyes. What they do is they track the direction of the eyes and record which point the eye is fixated on for at any given point of time.
Okay, so they're scanning it. Excuse me, I didn't use the right term. So after they've scanned it, then where does it go? What happens to that scan?
Well, it's actually a bunch of little numbers representing all this data about where the eyes have been looking, and they're looking at a number of parameters, and the illustration I showed two different parameters. One is how much the eye fixes on a given word, so you have this circle growing ever larger as it is there for a longer time, and then the eye movements, and they can be erratic or more erratic. So they look at those two basic things and then about 148 other things which they combine mathematically to look at what combination of movements is the best predictor of someone who is at risk for dyslexia based upon what we know about what movements, what eye movement data in the past has shown to turn out in real dyslexics with a rather extensive diagnosis and assessment phase.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Solomon.
I have questions in regards to, you're talking about someone as an expert that comes in, and you're not talking about the teacher administrating.
That's correct. The teacher, he or she has the normal class activity or something interesting going on while the students are conducted a short distance down the hall to a private room.
And I was wondering...
And then the child returns.
I know the concern about the time. I was wondering if are they developing a way for the first level of testing to be, in a computer lab that children do several of them at the same time. A first level can do this, and then something can be triggered. I was wondering some sort of partnership through training with our ESDs. Possibly administrating some sort of specialist part of it. I also was concerned about the language. It's just Swedish and English.
Well, you happen to see the Swedish text there because there were Swedish children being tested, and that's...
Oh, I thought you said that was the only ones right now.
No. You said it was also in English, Swedish and English.
No, that's what I'm saying.
What,
I'm concerned about Spanish,
the video,
Russian,
the video
Vietnamese.
Showed Swedish.
Yeah. Right.
But English tests exist, and you can put Spanish or Turkish up here if you want to.
And then others, yes. Oh, okay.
So in principle, there's no limit on the language.
Okay.
I'd like to come back to your first question about the multiple testing station and ESDs. Yes, at this point, a teacher cannot administer this. A designated expert has to come in with this rather expensive equipment and sit there with the child and doing it right now. However, one can bring two or three units and gang it up that way. And in the future, because you can't multiply this by this one company sending out experts wherever a school district, you know, can come on Monday.
I was thinking a regular, but you're saying it's not just a regular camera with a webcam that can
watch. No, it's not a web camera. It's a very, very special camera that tracks eye movements. That particular technology is getting better and better, and it's coming down in price all the time. So that I would expect that in 5 or 6 years, this company, Optalexia, is no longer sending out its experts, but they're selling units, and that school district has a testing unit. That school district has a testing unit as well, because the cost has come down, and the equipment is not that fragile, and it's not that hard to use.
Okay, and then my last one was the follow-up. Thank you, Chair. Is the pilot program. You had mentioned that you were hoping or looking into pilots. So are pilots free? Is that how pilot programs work? So,
well, early pilots, yes, they would be free. Right now, the offer has gone out to many states in the United States, and some have put up their hand. And so some things are being engaged, and I think one pilot is going on next week. I've put this out to Oregon as well, and we're talking to some people in Friday who might be able to move that along as well. But I cannot speak on behalf of the company right now to say, oh, yes, well, see you next Tuesday. And
but the school districts and ESTs as well that you're putting that out to?
Not knowing the Oregonian nomenclature for this, who is it going out to?
On Friday, you mean?
Yeah.
Region 1, you're probably familiar
with. You need to come up and identify yourself, please, for the record.
All right. I'm Catherine Hartlove, a former school administrator and teacher, currently retired. And I did a lot of work with literacy in our schools. So what we're going to on Friday would be Region 1. Well, you probably know Bill Stewart at the state level. And there are a lot of people who would be curriculum directors, special ed people who would be reading specialists would be at this meeting to be able to hear what's going on with this.
Okay.
Your question?
Nope. Okay, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. And sorry I missed the first few minutes and maybe you addressed this already. Does this type of testing have secondary uses in terms of catching a vision problem with a child that maybe isn't dyslexia related? And specifically, I had a child who we did not catch until way late that he had amblyopia, and I'm probably not saying that right, but you know, basically sort of this very difficult lazy eye, and it strikes me that as he was reading, you know, when you're compensating with one eye because you're almost blind in the other eye, you know, does this have the ability to sort of have that secondary purpose, or have you come to explore that at all?
I don't know the answer to the question with regard to that specific
or just any ocular
disorder. It might. I'll just say it might. It can be used because you're tracking a behavior which is linked to lots of cognitive behaviors, and because you're tracking lots of data points per second on it, it can theoretically be linked to predictions of other kinds of things. And there are other interesting disorders which are on the carpet, which I can't discuss anywhere. but one thing I will say in response to this is that the child who has other kinds of issues, such as ADHD or hyperactivity, or even other kinds of motor problems, should still be able to use this test. So I leave it open on the detection of other interesting things. The test can be widely applied.
Thank you.
And back to Representative Solomon, that your idea about involving ESDs and other people would be a natural development of this. Yes.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. As I said, we brought them up. It was a very interesting concept. So we wanted to hear about it. And thank you very much for participating.
Thank Thank you very much.
Okay, is there anyone else that wants to testify on this? Well, actually, no, it was an informational hearing, so there is no testimony. Okay, so with that, I close the informational hearing on dyslexic screening, and I open up a public hearing on House Bill 2648, which is me. So, yes, I'm going to give the gavel to... So there's no conflict of interest here.
Very good.
Okay. Yes, so it's gonna, I'm just going to be speaking from up here. So.
Okay. Chair, so is he still the chair, or is that...
Or are you still the chair? No, momentarily he is.
Okay.
Are we ready for me to open a public hearing?
Yes, please do that.
All right, we open a public hearing on House Bill 2648. Representative Doherty will be testifying.
Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee, House Bill 2648 adds school social workers to the list of professions that qualify the school district or education service district to receive monies for decreasing rates of absenteeism. Current law allows school nurses, school counselors, psychologists, or clinical psychologists to qualify. This bill declares emergency and goes into effect upon passage, has no subsequent referrals, and the fiscal and revenue statement have not been issued for this bill.
Thank you, Representative. If you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, I will. My name is Margaret Doherty. I am the House Representative for House District 35, which is Tigard and Southwest Portland. And so what I'd like to do today is to testify on behalf of House Bill 2648. And by reference, last year we passed a bill, and it was a grant program for trauma-informed care. And what it was is we had different schools that had either hired under the law, it was somebody who had a school-based health center or had trauma people in the building were the ones that qualified for the grant. And they included school nurses, school counselors, school psychologists, and clinical psychologists. And those were the groups that you would have that would qualify for this grant. And so what this bill does is literally just expand the program to also include school social workers and ones that are trained in school social workers. So as school districts across Oregon strive to serve the individual needs of the students, House Bill 2648 provides a modest change that will make the big difference for the districts. The bill only adds school social workers to the list of professionals that qualify to provide trauma-informed behavioral health services within a school-based health system. This addition would qualify schools that employ school social workers for funding provided by the Chief Education Office and the Oregon Health Authority to address absenteeism by using trauma-informed care. Expanding the support for professionals who can provide trauma-informed care, like school social workers, is a vital asset to our schools. And I think all of us talk to teachers and administrators, and especially in the younger grades, quite a few behavioral problems are arising. And I think one example is to, and the schools don't necessarily have the resources to deal with these children that have been traumatized by either, usually by home situations. And I think, and the teachers don't have the time nor the training to deal with this. And I think a good example of this is one of my elementary schools I was at, and a little second grader just, you know, he would bolt from class all the time. And he'd go and come to the principal's office because he liked the principal. And the principal, who was very, very good, would say, you know, Joey, you need to go back to class and so on. Even tried to bribe him around Halloween with a Halloween costume. And he would still bolt and come back to that security of the principal. Well, the year before, when he was in first grade, he had been pulled from the home for domestic abuse. And when he was on the phone to his mother, he asked... made the statement is that he just hoped that Daddy didn't leave bruises on her like the last time. And so these are the sort of trauma-induced issues that we're dealing with more and more in schools. And so what this bill is just expands the professionals, the trained professionals that can work with this. And so it should be no surprise that a traumatic experience like this has a negative effect on their learning environment. So, as I say, already included in the list of trauma-informed service providers are school nurses, school counselors, school psychologists, and clinical psychologists. And what we'd do is that this would be an important addition to the bill. There are currently in Oregon 36 school social workers across Oregon. And because a school social worker is different than a licensed social worker. And this number will only keep growing as more and more schools turn to use this this model. So I thank you for the consideration of this important issue, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for the representative? All right.
Okay.
Seeing none, thank you. I'll hand this back to you.
Would you like to close out the information here?
Sure. Oh. Anyone to...
Anyone on the sign-up list? No, no one's on the sign-up list.
All right, very
Can
good.
I make a comment?
Mm-hmm.
As a social worker?
Representative Hernandez.
So I actually started my school social work program 1 year later than than when the school social work licensure was available. So I missed it. But I would have actually gotten that licensure if I had the opportunity to. I still ended up working in a school. But I can attest to the level of skill and training and value that program educates. And now that PSU and other programs are producing school social workers, there's a bunch of folks who are ready to go into the field and help our students.
And I understand the Portland State program is growing.
Yes.
The Portland State School Social Work program is growing.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments?
Thanks.
All right, thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2648.
Okay, so with that, we have nothing else on the agenda. Is there anything we need to deal with?
Nope.
Okay, other than the fact that on Monday and Tuesday we'll be in Hearing Room C, that's it. So I close the House Education Committee.
Madam Chair, oops. Do we have committee on Tuesday?
On Tuesday?
Monday and Wednesday.
Monday and Wednesday. I meant Monday and Wednesday.
Thanks.
So Monday, right. Tuesday comes after Monday.
Thanks.
So Monday, right. Tuesday comes after Monday.